Our special guest tonight, Nick Pope, as we escape for a few hours from the tragedies over the weekend. And again, our condolences to the families of those victims who were killed and shot, and also the injured. We're going to come back with Nick in a moment. We'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Nick Pope. We're going to take your questions this hour as we talk about ufology. His latest work is his DVD called Indistinguishable from Magic. I love that title, Nick. How'd you come up with that?
Well, it was inspired by that great Arthur C. Clarke quote that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I wanted to get away from this idea that if we meet extraterrestrials, their technology will be recognizable to us in just a few years ahead. And I wanted to make people sort of realize that given the age of the universe, that it's likely we'll be dealing with concepts that we can't understand with, not just the technologies, the underlying concepts.
Can we expect more DVDs from you?
Yes, I think so. I have a few ideas, and as I say, I'm quite attracted by the idea that when I do these video-on-demand projects, that essentially I sit down and I script them. So I write a script, which is about 9,000 words.
Wow, it's like a book.
Yeah, it's a real deep dive. So I get my own personal say without having to deal too much with directors and producers and editors.
And we'll still see you on Ancient Aliens and conferences and things like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm still filming new episodes of Ancient Aliens as we speak, going to the Alien Con events and other conferences. I'm doing a conference in Barcelona, I think, next month, and then I'm going on a tour down to Brazil in November. So lots going on.
Where are you living now, United Kingdom or in the States?
Tucson, Arizona.
Aha, okay. Hey, good for you. When did you move here?
I moved over in January 2012. So, loving it here.
Oh, that's great. Now, you know, when we look at the field of ufology, the one thing that baffles me happens to be these incredible real cases of military personnel at nuke sites who swear on a Bible that UFOs fly over the sites, shut them down, and then open them up again and take off. What's your take on those?
Well, those are certainly interesting and quite disturbing cases. And I guess I always have to, even though I retired from the Ministry of Defense some time ago, I have to be careful when discussing nuclear issues. But what I will say is obviously there are a number of cases where it's reliably alleged that weapons have been effectively taken offline. But I suppose the most disturbing case is the one, I think it's a Ukrainian case, where the opposite happened, and actually some missiles in a silo went into, shortly after a UFO was seen hovering over the silo, they went into their pre-launch sequence.
We might have had a big problem with that.
Absolutely. So a lot of people have theorized that what this is it's sending us a message. You know, if you do come out into the wider universe, don't take your silly little toys with you, and certainly don't think about using them in anger as you have used them on Earth, because if you do, we can just switch them on and off at our will. Again, we are back to indistinguishable from magic. The flick of the finger, mm-hmm. The idea that our best tech is rendered useless.
Even though we all believe that we've been visited from extraterrestrials since the beginning of time, Nick, it really seemed to pick up after the atomic bombs after World War II. Roswell was in 1947. Ken Arnold saw his sightings. Is that perception pretty correct, that after we detonated nukes, more UFO cases occurred?
Yes, I think that's an interesting point. I think you could say that whilst, obviously, as a matter of historical fact, people have always seen strange things in the sky, there is this escalation during the 40s. And I think two things, if you're looking at it in that context, two things happened very close to each other. Firstly, we developed, obviously, atomic weapons. But secondly, through the V2, that evolved into the technology that really was our first baby steps out into the wider cosmos. So that might have put us on the radar, so to speak, of other civilizations out there. It's the old joke, the kids have found the matches, but not only have they found the matches, they've now maybe found the means to take those first steps out and ultimately take our stage, our place on the wider galactic stage.
Let's take some phone calls for you now this hour, Nick. Steve is in the state of Washington. Welcome to the program. Hi, Steve.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
The only thing I wanted to talk about was I think we're moving things a little bit too fast. Number one, I think that we should slow down a little bit, let the adversary take the first step. I believe in UFOs, and I believe that they're out there and what have you. If they wanted to take us out, they would have done a long time ago.
Yep.
And we should hold back and see what happens. And if they throw the first punch, we throw one back. That's as simple as that.
What do you think of that, Nick?
Well, I think it goes back to the point that we shouldn't throw any punches at all. That what our priority should be is to establish a line of communication and in all these situations. This is a war that we could not hope to win, and that therefore the only way to deal with that is not to fight the war in the first place. In other words, to talk to them. And that's why one of my favorite sci-fi movies, I mentioned Contact earlier, but one of my other favorite and slightly more recent ones is Arrival. And of course there, one of the central themes is how would we understand what an extraterrestrial civilization might be trying to communicate to us? How could we deal with some of the linguistic subtleties? The example they use is conveying the difference between a tool and a weapon. So that should be. I take the point about sitting back, but let's not throw any punches at all.
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Tom, go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call. Nick, it's always a pleasure to hear your interviews. You know, Nick, a comment and then a question. I often wonder if a citizen would be loyal to a government or to a military or to a religious organization if they could effortlessly rejuvenate, regenerate their own body and perhaps become biologically immortal. I mean, why be loyal to any organization? And so it seems to me that the real extraterrestrial magic may be an advanced medical technology that allows the human body to effortlessly regenerate itself, rejuvenate itself, and perhaps become biologically immortal. My question, Nick, are there secret laboratories, government, military, transnational corporations that are reverse engineering advanced extraterrestrial medical technology that could possibly rejuvenate, regenerate ourselves effortlessly?
I don't know the answer to that question. What I do know, and there is some available information about this in the public domain, is that of course we ourselves are making some considerable efforts to certainly extend the human lifetime and you know, whether that's through trying to conquer various diseases or whether it's just through trying to reverse the aging process. I don't know whether ultimately any of that will be successful, but I think it goes to one other interesting point which I haven't really had a chance to make yet, is the idea that we may be in a largely post-biological universe, and the solution to the, if indeed there is a solution to the problem of aging and mortality might be something to do with machine intelligence. And we see with transhumanism the idea of trying to blend humans and machines and produce something there. So I this gets me into territory that it's outside my area of expertise, because it speaks to things like consciousness and could you ever download your consciousness into a machine and onto the internet. But people are thinking about that, and one or two people are working on it, but I don't know whether it's reverse engineered or just people playing the what if we could do this game.
Nick, what are the possibilities that this kind of alien technology may not be alien at all, but it might be ours or Russian or Chinese or something like that?
Well, that's the big question. When we look at these U.S. Navy videos, for example, whether it's Tic Tac, Gimbal, Go Fast, whatever it is, there really are only four possibilities here. Possibility number one is that it's some sort of bizarre combination of pilot misidentification, radar error, forward-looking infrared system glitch. Possibility number two is that it's our own tech, some U.S. black project being blind tested against the U.S. fleet. Possibility number three is that it's a foreign military power, probably Russia or China. And possibility number four is that it's extraterrestrial. Now, so far as I know, none of those theories have been absolutely taken off the table, and that's why it would be interesting to see what's going on with these congressional briefings.
Sure.
Right now.
Well, the only thing I think, Nick, is if it is Russian or Chinese technology, they would be using it to really strengthen and tighten the belt, and nobody's using it. I mean, if you got that kind of technology, why hide it?
Yes. I mean, it is interesting and disturbing, of course, that so many of the world's current flashpoints, whether it's the Strait of Hormuz, the Baltic Sea, the Black Sea, or the Spratly Islands, are going to involve naval forces. And again, is that a factor here? I don't know the answer, but those are questions we should be asking.
Let's go to Fran in Knoxville, Tennessee. Welcome to the program, Fran. Hi.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking this call.
Sure.
Hi, Nick. I enjoy seeing you on Ancient Aliens.
Thank you.
I have two questions. The first is, my husband and I watched a tape from the Science Channel today. It was one of our rovers that landed on Mars sent back samples of dirt taken from deep in the Earth, in the dirt of Mars. And it showed that it had been destroyed 300 million years ago by a nuclear attack. And I kind of wondered what the point was of trying to recolonize a planet like Mars or any other if that advanced type of alien would just destroy us anyway. And then the second question is, what is your opinion about Valiant Thor supposedly living in the White House for 3 years while Eisenhower was president? And I can take my answer offline.
And Valiant Thor apparently came from Venus. Remember that story, Nick?
Yes, I do. I'm
a stranger at the Pentagon.
Sure, yeah. I'm not an expert on that story. I've seen it, but I have no inside information on it. So it falls into that interesting, if true, category, of course. I hope that...
Well, apparently Valiant Thor wanted to give us all kinds of information, and we didn't take it.
Well, that raises an interesting point that it's almost a philosophical point, and again, I cover it in my latest film. Even if we could get, as gifts, all these technologies, should we accept them? And I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but my point is this. Shouldn't we, in terms of human development and achievement, figure out things for ourselves? Otherwise, isn't it just like a child reading the answers at the back of the textbook instead of actually learning the material and developing intellectually? So, as I say, it's almost a philosophical argument. So I don't know the ins and outs of the Valiant Thor story, but if gifts were offered, you know, history tells us and mythology tells us gifts often come with a price.
It was an incredible story at the time. Craig Campobasso did his documentary on that.
Sure. And just to speak to the first question, I'm not an expert on the whole Mars nuclear issue either, but we were discussing earlier, we need, if we are to develop as a species and ultimately escape being burnt to a cinder when the sun expands, we need to go a heck of a lot further than Mars.
Absolutely. Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Wayne.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, good morning.
Sir George and Nick Pope. A quick comment. I've got a background in metals and researching metals, and I was actually looking up metamaterials, and Nick Pope's picture popped up on one of those websites. So I think he's got some information on that. I know when Art was doing Art's parts and had one of these metals tested, one of them came up bismuth, and I know that bismuth is one of the most stable metals. I think it's number 83 on the periodical chart. And the process of making these metals for these spacecraft amorphous, which means that the metal has actually no cellular structure or no grains to it. It's actually all combined together, makes it super strong, like the metals we hear about that are crumpled up and bounced back again, like the memory metal. So, Nick, I'm wondering, in the UK, when you're over there and kind of in charge of the area you were in charge of, did you ever come across any of these types of materials? And is there like an unacknowledged special access program system over there like we have over here?
Yeah, let me take the second question first. Absolutely, we have SAP programs, and we have so we have not just the top secret SCI clearances, but then there are a number of separate programs that you can be read onto. And broadly speaking, yes, the situation in the UK with regard to access to classified information is broadly analogous to the position here in the US. We did not have any metamaterials. If the US government recovered anything like that, I'm afraid they didn't share it even with the Brits as hopefully closest ally. But I'm aware that, of course, Tom DeLonge and his very controversial To the Stars Academy group have their ADAM project, which looks as if there is some overlap with the Art's parts business, but some different materials too. And I hear some interesting stories that isotopic ratio analysis has suggested off-world origin for some of this. But until and unless this is written up in something like Science and Nature, which, of course, if we're dealing with those sorts of sensitive compartmentalized programs, might not be the route this goes down. But until that happens, it's very difficult to get to the bottom of this.
And I'm convinced, Nick, because the universe has got all the same elements, that we're going to find the same kind of complexity of metals and everything else, don't you?
Yes. I mean, you know, people use the phrase mystery metals. There aren't mystery metals, as you just said. Basically, everything sits somewhere on the periodic table. But through isotopic ratio analysis, we could at least tell, as a yes-no answer, whether something had originated outside of the Earth, because, of course, you know, exposure to cosmic rays and such like will give you those differences.
Absolutely. Well, stay with us, Nick. We're going to come back and take some final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll be back in a moment, of course, with Nick Pope with final questions from you. Next hour, Dr. Joan Rosenberg joins me with her work, 90 Seconds to a Life You Love. Looking forward to that. And we probably could use something like that right about now. And welcome back to Coast. We are back with our final segment with Nick Pope as we talk about his work, Indistinguishable from Magic, the DVD, of course, about UFOs. And again, Nick, where can people see this?
It's on Amazon, iTunes, and all sorts of other VOD platforms.
Can they get to it through your website, too?
Through Twitter, actually, at Nick Pope, M-O-D.
All right, very good. Nick, since this has been happening since the beginning of time, does it seem to be revving up right about now, or where would you put it compared to, let's say, the 1940s and 50s?
Oh, ab- Absolutely, it's ramping up right now. We see with the upsurge that the U.S. Navy is witnessing, with the interest in Congress, with the president addressing this, we see a quickening of the pace that I've certainly never seen before. And I know it's something of a cliche in this subject, but for once, the phrase "we seem to be building up to something," I think, comes to mind.
Do you think there was a period where hucksters and hoaxes and people like that were all over the place?
Yes, but my argument was always, let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. And again, it's one of my favorite sayings, that the skeptics need to be right every day. The believers only need to be right once. So yes, there are always going to be hoaxes in this subject, but we need to pick out the signal amidst the noise, and the signal is there.
What's your take with crop formations? What do you think they are?
Well, you know what? That is something where I'm more skeptical. So I tend not to be a great fan of that, and I know that surprises a lot of people, as I'm a Brit. But I'm just not as interested in that as I am by the sorts of parts of this phenomenon where we can put our hands on something more tangible in terms of pilots and radar. I mean, I've seen people make crop circles, some pretty darn good ones too. So, I'm not convinced.
Because they started in the United Kingdom, didn't they?
Yeah, very much so. And there are even one or two historical reports going back. Look, as with all of this, I'm happy to be proven wrong. I mean, I'm not sort of sitting here sort of saying that I'm the final arbiter on this. There are many people who've studied this particular aspect far more than I have, and if they can bring something to the table and say this is absolutely definitive, you can take it to the bank proof, then I'm happy to be proven wrong.
Let's go to JT in Knoxville, Tennessee. Welcome to the show, JT.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, George. I'm a huge fan. My father has brought me up from a young age. I'm 22.
Oh, that's great.
Say, thank you, Nick, for your Ancient Aliens and everything.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. My question is that I want to know what you think about Operation Solar Warden and the secret space program.
Do you know about that, Nick?
Sure. I mean, I think, again, it's not my specialist subject, but I mean, as is the case with aerospace, we know that with the space program, there are things out there that won't be publicly declared or acknowledged for many, many years, and I think that's taken as an absolute given. Whether all the stories that one hears of the secret space program are true or not, I don't know. But again, it goes back to the point, we don't need all the stories to be true. We just need one of them to be true, and it takes us to new territory. The problem is, of course, that we know that there are going to be two key battle spaces in any future war. One is cyberspace, the other is outer space, and so we're back to the point that these are highly classified matters that we're unlikely to learn about, because, of course, we don't want the other side to see. You know, it's like playing a high-stake game of poker. You don't want the other side to see what cards you're holding.
Good point. Let's go to Mike in Reno. Welcome to the show. Hi, Michael.
Thanks, Mr. Norrie. Mr. Pope, a great title. My question is, which world leader, as it stands now, do you think would be best able to handle this information of revelation? Because I think it would be cataclysmic. And I tend to think that the revelation would be more indirect and subtle, because each of these countries with the divisions we have is going to try to, you know, side up to the aliens. But Mr. Norrie, I have a comment to you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Michael.
I don't think Einstein's general theory of relativity is true. It's nonsense. It's not two dots on a paper that's folded. That's mumbo jumbo, or a blanket like in the physics books. It's going to be, travel's going to be anti-gravitic. These critters mm-hmm. live hundreds of years. They might be part machine. They could hibernate. And Einstein's view of gravity is totally wrong. It's not because space is not bent. It's not a fabric, and it's not caused by geometry. I could explain to you what gravity is in 10 seconds if you want.
10 seconds, it's yours.
It's a displacement of the ether by the body in space. You have to resurrect the ether. Gravity is a push by the ether, the universal ether, on the planet to push down. The Einstein general theory is totally wrong, not special relativity. Thank you, Mr. Norrie, for letting me say that.
Absolutely. Nick Pope, what do you say?
Well, you know, I think it goes slightly beyond my understanding of things. I think it goes back to the point that it's like trying to explain quantum physics to chimpanzees, only we are the chimpanzees. So some of these concepts, we may not even have not just the words for them, but the ability to understand them.
We've got Catherine in Houston, Texas. Hey, Catherine, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure
thing. I've been
trying
to get a hold of you for years to tell you the story.
Oh, great. Love to hear it.
We saw a UFO in 1973. Skylab 3 was up at the time, and my then brother-in-law, who was only 12, set up a telescope, and it came through at 7 o'clock that night.
Whoa.
And then, yeah, what happened is my brother-in-law kept coming in and saying, can you all tell me what's going on? The sky is pink. And then we were busy. We were in college, and it was senior year. We were trying to get done. And finally, he kept coming back, and we went out and looked the second time. And all of a sudden, a UFO came down the road. It came over the trees, and it came right by the house, and we were all standing out there waving at it.
You never forgot it, did you?
No, the funniest thing, though, like we were trying to figure out what it was, there were three cell towers in the air, and we thought, well, maybe they're out there fixing the cell towers, but all of a sudden, this UFO came down the road, and it went over the house, and it was like maybe 30 feet over the house, and it went up over the mountain, behind the
house.
And
what did you think at that time, Catherine, that it might have been?
It was a triangular UFO.
And you didn't figure, oh, it's government or anything like that, did you?
No, it was interfering with the television at the time. We didn't even think anything about that until later. My father-in-law actually went out. You know, the TVs had the tubes at the time. He went out and, you know, had to buy new tubes and tried to fix it and couldn't fix it. And then all of a sudden, it got better after the UFO went away. But here's the really weird thing about it. George Knapp had a show sometime last year, I believe, and he was talking to a man that knew Bob Bigelow, and this man explained that the UFO, the UFO with the Skylab 3 astronauts on it witnessed.
They saw something.
Yes, they witnessed it. And they said that the science officer who was responsible for taking pictures was extremely frightened by what he saw. So that was the same night that we saw it.
What would you think, Nick, if you were up in a Skylab-type apparatus and you saw a UFO float by?
Well, I guess I'd be, firstly, pretty excited, and then, as the old joke goes, do you call defense or do you call state? You know, so I've never seen one of these things, and I guess that would be the perfect setting for it. And with space tourism a thing that's going to touch many, many more people over the next few years, who knows what people will encounter as they go out there. And just to speak to one of the other questions that came up a moment ago where somebody said, what world leader? Increasingly, this is being taken out of the hands of political leaders, and it's going into the hands of the private sector and, indeed, to the ordinary people.
Did you know Dr. J. Allen Hynek personally?
I didn't. I was involved in this for the government just too late for us to intersect. But, of course, I have met his son recently, and he's told me a few interesting anecdotes about somebody who's really one of the heroes of this subject, of course.
Absolutely. Joe in Monterey, California is with us now. Hey, Joseph.
Hi, George.
Hey, Joe.
One of the things that I notice in all talk show hosts, when they talk about extraterrestrials and UFOs in particular, they always talk about the technology and everything about the technology, but they never consider that the ones that come here, the ones that use technology, maybe they're not that advanced as far as the ones that don't need technology to travel. They may be able to open up a vortex and walk right through, or maybe travel spiritually and do as much as they can spiritually as they can do with technology.
Mm-hmm, maybe.
We need to advance the human race spiritually and mentally in other areas, so this way we can catch up and pass our own technology, and then we will be able to travel to the stars.
What do you think, Nick? Possible.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Absolutely. There may be different ways to do it, and not all of those ways may involve starships.
No, that's absolutely true. Let's go to Hawaii, Oahu. Diana's with us. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I was interested on Nick's views on transhumanism and if he thought it was based on, like, alien technology.
Did you make that out, Nick?
Yes. I mean, I don't know that it's based on extraterrestrial technology, but of course people are experimenting with it. And I think we've discussed previously a Ministry of Defense study called Global Strategic Trends, where in the public domain there is some discussion of human augmentation that might take place over the next 30 years or so that would transform us as a species. And again, it's about a coming together of humans and machines. So Global Strategic Trends, there's some interesting material in there for people who want to have a look.
What do you think of the Kenneth Arnold sighting that really kicked all of this into the modern version?
Well, it's certainly, I suppose, one of the handful of iconic incidents, and that's most significant, of course, for really giving us the term flying saucer, and it is, though, as I say, people have always seen strange things in the sky, it really brought into focus this as a modern mystery. So it is almost literally a ground zero of the UFO phenomenon, certainly in the modern world.
Off to Tucson, Arizona we go, west of the Rockies. James is with us now. James, welcome.
All right. Say, I got a couple of questions. First of all, are either of you familiar with a fellow named Robert O. Dean, who was said to have some photographic evidence? I guess he was in the U.S. military for a while.
Yes, I met Bob Dean.
Bob Dean,
times.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
I think he's the real deal, James.
Well, I have a personal question now. I heard you say you moved from England to Tucson, and I want your reaction to these violence incidents that have just happened. I mean, when you walk down the streets of Tucson, do you keep looking over your shoulder, watching out for one of these crazy gun nut Americans, or how do you think about it? I mean, do you feel threatened everywhere you go, and how do the other people back in your home country think about this when they hear about it? Now, I'll listen off here, I think.
Okay, James.
Well, all these tragedies are desperately sad, and I'm not.
And they're young people too, Nick. That's what makes it even sadder, I think.
I think unfortunately we see it all around the world, and if it's not with guns, it's people spraying gasoline around and burning a building, as we saw in Japan. And if it's not gasoline and guns, then it's knives or lorries. And unfortunately, angry people will always find a way to do this, whether it's knives, guns, fire, lorries, trucks, whatever it is. It's desperately sad. But no, personally, I just get on with my life. I live my life. I love living here in the United States. It's a great country, and tragedy can and sadly does strike everywhere.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, what do you think an extraterrestrial thinks of this planet?
I would think they would throw up their hands or tentacles or whatever appendages in horror. And, you know, maybe it's back to the argument about maybe we need to show that we're worthy to take our place on a wider galactic stage before we do get open contact.
Yet higher evolution doesn't necessarily mean that they're nicer people.
No, it just means more efficient, effective ways of killing people, maybe.
That's true. Nick, thank you again. Nick Pope with us. His website, nickpope.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We've been talking about his latest work, which is a DVD called Indistinguishable from Magic. And we will be back with more as we talk about things that really will affect you.